Okay. I mean, you were born, brought up in Yale, weren't you?
Yeah. I was actually born in Irvine Central.
Oh, right.
Hospital, which has always been a bit of a bugbear for me, because I like the concept of being born and brought up in air, so that wee technical glitch is a bit of a problem. I lived in air till I was 17. So.
Yeah. Your dad's French?
My dad's French, yes. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Did he speak French? I mean, did you speak French as a kid?
This was always a point of contention. When I was young, I was bilingual.
Uh-huh.
And when I went to primary school, I was told just before my dad died that I had actually managed to speak fluent French as a child.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I have no recollection of this, but apparently I was asked to speak French in class once when a visiting teacher came. I've blotted it from my mind, and that caused me a lot of distress and got me a lot of teasing. And I came home from the incident and said to my dad that, oh, I didn't want to have a French father, I wanted to be just like everyone else, and I didn't like being set aside from everyone else in school, and that was basically shutdown time.
Mm-hmm.
I have one or two vague recollections of actually learning French,
mm-hmm.
But when my dad tried to pick it up again, I was at the silly giggly stage,
yeah.
And couldn't take it seriously. But I do remember. I do remember being upstairs and him, like, pointing out to things in the room,
mm-hmm.
and naming them. And I was to repeat it. And when we were out for a walk, things like that, he would actually talk to me in French, mm-hmm. and I was to converse back. So at some point, I must have been bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be, toddler talk bilingual as opposed to adult talk bilingual. No use in business nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you came to study French at school, did you find it easy?
Yeah,
or?
Very easy.
Yeah, right.
So it must be in my genes. I think the biggest problem I've had with French is lack of vocabulary, and my vocabulary goes very quickly.
Mm.
I seem to have a kind of understanding of it when I'm over there, and particularly the Bordeaux dialect, which makes sense because my father was from Bordeaux,
mm-hmm.
and the only other person who I've had a friendship with who's been French is a girl called Catherine, and she was also from Bordeaux.
Mm-hmm.
She taught a class at Aberdeen University in business French,
mm-hmm.
and I went along for that just to kind of brush it up a wee bit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very, very rusty, and I have absolutely no confidence in it whatsoever at all, which is shocking.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes quite a wee while of relaxing before I get wound up, and I feel as if I can actually, converse in it.
Yeah. Did your mother ever learn French?
No, she didn't. She was very... she must have, because I did find in the loft after they both passed away, I found an absolute mountain of French books from about the 1940s and 50s.
Yeah.
So she must have given it a go. And it wasn't for lack of intelligence, because my mum certainly was capable she read a lot, and she would probably have got a handle on it, but I don't think she had any confidence in it. My mum had me when she was 40, so there was quite a big age gap between us.
Mm-hmm.
And in her childhood, they left school when they were 14 or 15 and went to work. So she would never have had the opportunity to even get a grounding in it at school.
Mm-hmm.
She apparently went over to France once with my father before I was born. And she didn't really cope terribly well with the language. She was too shy, mm-hmm. to attempt to speak it. And of course, with the Bordeaux accent.
Mm.
She was completely thrown.
Mm-hmm.
But I went over after my father died to visit an uncle who at that time was in an old folks home in Arcachon. And I went with my friend Shona, who's the lawyer from Aberdeen, and of course she has been taught French and has had extra French because she works for French oil companies. So we went down to visit him. We stayed in Bordeaux for a couple of nights, and we went to stay to see him. And it was really weird because I could understand what he was saying,
mm-hmm.
Although I didn't always have the vocabulary to reply,
mm-hmm.
but Shona couldn't understand very much of what he was saying because she had Parisian French, if you like, or the equivalent of the Queen's
right.
English.
Yes.
And there was one or two things, like I asked him how many people were in the old folks home, and he said, "Cinq."
Mm-hmm.
Now I knew that was 100, cinq.
Mm-hmm.
but Shona picked it up as five.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
She was sitting going, one, two, three. She could count more than five biddies sitting on benches just from viewpoint. So she was quite confused. But it was just the difference in accent. But yeah. I know that since she's gone to live in France and she's working there and she's coming across people from all over France, she's getting more used to the accents from the various different regions. Mm-hmm. So she's not so thrown by it. But the only times I've ever been, I was there with Shona. I've been in Paris a couple of times in business. Other times I've been the south of France, a place called Couleur, and then another place called Coulores, oddly enough, both similar names. Mm-hmm. But I found that once I was there, and maybe my blood got a wee bit used to the sort of atmosphere and everything, I found I got better. Yeah. I wasn't so scared to talk it, yeah.
And then you went to Glasgow School of Art to do textiles?
Yes. I went to Glasgow School of Art to annoy my parents. Because at the time, I think I had an offer of something like a lab technician. I had an offer of nursing. And I can't remember what the other thing was, but there was four things I was offered to go and do. And art school was the most wayward one, and the one they didn't want me to do. So that, of course, was the one I chose.
Mm.
Plus, I thought it would be the least hassle and the most fun.
Mm.
Went to Glasgow School of Art in 1977,
and
graduated in 81.
Mm. Did you go specifically to do textiles?
No, I hadn't a clue what I wanted to do. When I was at school, I specialised in portrait painting and drawing people. And I had a kind of thought I would stick with that idea, but I was very much conscious that I certainly, if I was going to invest 4 years in some kind of degree, I wanted to be able to work at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got there and we did a general 1 year course, I realised that I would have to choose a design subject because it was the only way you would get a job.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that the textile course was one where you could do a bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
You could do graphics or illustration, you could do a bit of embroidery weaving.
Mm-hmm.
You could do proper printed textiles or printmaking. Mm-hmm. It was a nice course, so you could actually get quite a lot of experience in different things. And we also did clothing design and fashion. And because I could sew already and make up patterns or alter patterns, I thought that would be a good one to do. But I enjoyed the course. It was very good.
And did you find it kind of bohemian lifestyle? Because that's always my view of art school. It was kind of full of...
Bohemian types?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people aspiring to be bohemian types. I don't know if they truly were. One of the things I particularly remember was the amount of people. I mean, obviously, I come from a very working class background, although my father was a skilled working class.
Mm.
But there was a lot of people in art school who were seriously upper class.
Mm.
And they were also serious communist lefties by their way of it. But only as long as father was putting the cheque in the bank every month. And there was quite a few aspiring bohemians. It was a fun place to be. One of the things I found was that it was so different from Ayr at the time. I mean, Ayr circa 1977 to 81. I was up in art school. We used to, particularly in textiles, it was a trendy place. It was very trend conscious.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't afford the trends of the time, obviously, clothing-wise, so we created trends. And one of the things we very often did was we wore vintage clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a great many times in my youth going round, obviously, the charity shops, which at the time in Glasgow weren't so... It wasn't such a normal thing to have charity shops. And also going to jumble sales down here. But I particularly remember one time I was affecting a 1950s look at the time. And I had come down on the train from Glasgow with a pencil skirt and original 1950s shoes with a little stilettos and a little boxy jacket and a wee 50s shirt and a handbag. I think I had my hair in a chignon or something. It was up in sort of 50s style. Mm-hmm. And I was mincing down your high street. And it was the comments I got were along the lines, "Oh, look at the state of that. Who does she think she is?" So I very quickly learned that I had to change. I had to come get down to Ayr or change in Glasgow with an Ayr outfit that was very jeans and t-shirt and normal.
Mm-hmm.
And the art school stuff was very much kept for
art school.
But it was quite good fun. We had lots of I don't remember much hard work. It seemed to be an awful scoosh, and there was an awful lot of being able to leave things to the last minute and all night staying up bashing out designs and things. So the discipline was about zero.
I think Lloyd was easier than my dad.
It was, but I remember lots of the parties we had, and you know, the Victoria Cafe was always where the trendy discos were held, and we always had themed discos or parties. So I remember things like, what was it, a 30s erotica or vintage erotica, where people had to make things, and the usual. I think we had a Rocky Horror Show. Inevitably we had a Rocky Horror Show one, and then it was usually per era. I remember a movie star one as well, where everyone was all... But the thing about art school for these parties, it's bad enough, I would think, in normal life, but in art school it was like 20 times bad, because you had to really be excellent. You know, if you were going to do yourself up as, yeah, I don't know, Lauren Bacall or Ava Gardner, you had to just look exactly like them, and everything had to be perfect, because there was so much criticism went on about your efforts. So it was quite interesting. So I enjoyed my time there. Yeah, got a degree, and did actually work as a designer, which
that was for Apollo Blinds.
I had two contracts before then. I did children's wear clothing for 6 months, and I did ladies' wear clothing 6 months with a company that supplied Marks and Spencer's.
Oh, right. That was in Glasgow, was it?
Yep, two factories. So I went from art school to Jordan Hill, and I lasted a week and a half.
Was it teacher training?
Teacher training. I was out on my first teacher training experience, and I thought, I can't do this. I'm going to kill a child. I just knew
it was. I would be in jail for the rest of my life.
there was a kind of slightly posh young girl getting bullied by another young girl in front of me, and that was red rag to a bull. And I very calmly sorted it out with them, but I think they could tell by my. But there was this scary lady, so I thought, I've got to get out of this. And a job came up at a factory working, I think it was something like 8 o'clock in the morning till 5:30 at night. It was grim. And I think I got paid the equivalent of 3 and 6. Uh-huh. But it was silly money. It was only about £2,000 a year or something. It was pennies in the early 80s, which was, it was rubbish money. But it was only for a short while, and I worked reasonably hard, but one of the hardest things was going from the lackadaisical attitude in an art school to a factory.
Yes.
And the discipline. And they expected me to just churn designs all day. So it was a bit odd, because I'd nothing to measure it by. I'd only ever worked in shops and things like that. I didn't know how I was meant to be behaving. But I kind of got through it. It was okay. I did
a lot of
designs.
Were you part of the department, or...? Were you part of a department?
I had a corner of the factory floor, and it was the sample, so it was design and sample area. So I would do the designs, and the guy bought in fabrics. I was there when the fabric people came, and I would supervise which fabrics were coming in. They also sent me down to trade fairs and so forth, so that I knew what the kind of forthcoming trends would be. And then I would create for a particular manufacturer a range of proposals, and I had a couple of ladies that would make the samples up for me, but I did the design and pattern cutting.
That's coming back to me. Mm-hmm. Why are you doing this?
And then...
sounds like quite a lot for 2,000 a year.
Eh?
Quite a lot of work for 2,000 a year.
Yeah, it was far too much work for 2,000 a year. Not a good way to start, because I thought, is this what working life is like? I don't like it. So I did an awful lot of designs for them. My best seller was a pinafore, which was the most hideous looking object in the world, but it was a crimpling pinafore for children. And I think it was like a soft green, a soft blue and a soft pink with a little embroidered motif on it. But it was very plain, very simple, very cheap to make. Mm-hmm. And it sold millions in BHS. And it's odd, because it was the simplest things that actually did well.
Yeah.
And it was the time of the beginning of the influence of Princess Diana.
Oh, right.
So everything had to have little fluted ruffs and puffy sleeves and that kind of beginning of the princess look as it was then.
Yeah.
Gross. Yeah. Would you dress your wings in this? No. So that was the first contract. And then I was on the dole for a few months, and I did clothing for a friend who had a shop at the time.
That's right. That's what's up in the the vegetarian restaurant.
Mourag had a shop there, and I did one-offs for her. And then I got a contract with a ladies' wear. But it was awful because it was a way over. It was easy to get to the place that I worked. I could walk from where I lived to the children's wear factory, but it was like two buses, and I started at 8 o'clock. For this other factory, it was way over in Pulmadee, wherever that is now. I don't even know the logistics of it, but it was a horrible job because I was in with quite a number of other pattern cutters, and I did a lot of pattern cutting and grading, you know, for the different sizes, because apparently I seemed to have a natural talent for it. And it was like 6H pencils sharpened to a needle point that you had to grade collars for shirts and things in. But it wasn't a nice place to work, and there was an awful lot of atmospheres and so on and so forth. So I was actually quite pleased when they said, I did a lot of designs in my 6 months, and some of them were taken up by Marks and Spencer's, but after that I was really quite pleased when they said no. And then I was back on the dole for a while, and then I got a job with Apollo Window Blinds. And I did textiles and graphics, and you know, I helped the guy with the shop interior designs and all the presentation materials and everything. It was really good fun.
You were there for quite a while.
I was there for 3.5 years. Yeah. I basically designed myself out a job because I had designed ahead all the plain colour ranges, all the Venetian slats and roller blinds, and I'd brought in festoon and Austrian blinds and started up a wee production line and everything. But they didn't change their pattern books that often. And having put in place something that was going to perceive to run for the next 3 or 4 years, there was nothing for me to do. And they offered me a job as a new product manager or something, but it was the same. I was to stay at the same salary for the next 3 years, which at the time was only $7,500, and to prove myself in the post. And I thought no, and I started doing a diploma in marketing at night school, courtesy of them. And I took the plunge at the time. I thought, well, I'll go back to college full time and I'll do a diploma in management studies, because a friend had done it and felt it was worthwhile. So I jacked in my job, jacked in my flat, moved to Aberdeen, and did that.
So it's Aberdeen College. Where did you do the
Robert Gordon's Institute at the time. It's now Robert Gordon's University.
And from that you went on to Grampian.
No. Again, when I qualified with that one, Aberdeen was going through a bit of a low pitch, and I couldn't get a job over the summer holidays. I eventually ended up working for it was a safety training company, but they wanted someone to draw cartoons. And I had to draw slip strips and falls and all, you know, various cartoons. It was a contract job. I got paid by the hour, but there was a lot of work, and it was the richest I'd ever been. I mean, money was coming, and I couldn't believe I was getting paid for drawing silly cartoon pictures. It was just the best job in the universe. But what happened, I worked there for about a year and a half or 2 years, and then I felt as if I wasn't using my diploma in management studies. And a job had come up at Aberdeen Enterprise Trust, as a business counsellor come manager of the Prince of Scottish Youth Business Trust, and I applied for it and I got it. So I worked there for about 2.5 years. And that was interesting because, I mean, thinking in terms of accents, when I'd first been in Aberdeen, I wasn't really too bithered, as they say up there, by the people I'd met, because their accent was fairly moderated. But when I worked in Aberdeen Enterprise Trust, there was people coming down from Fraserburgh and Peterhead, and they really had a very strong accent, and trying to counsel them in business things. And there was almost like a delayed reaction from when they said something, and my brain unscrambled it. And then I could go, yes, okay, right now. And it took a while for me to get an ear for the Peterhead accent particularly.
Did you find Aberdeen different from Glasgow?
Very. Yeah. Colder, much colder, much less friendly. In the way that in Glasgow you could stand at a bus stop and folk would talk to you. I mean, I have many memories of the journey from Byers Road area to where the Apollo Window Blinds factory was, and I had to go through Govan. I had to go through Govan bus station of a morning, and it seemed to be the time where they were chucking out the guys that had been kept overnight in the jail. And there was an assortment of characters used to appear in the morning with cuts and bruises and bashes and things, and they would come up and kind of leer at the bus queue, obviously trying to freak people out. And there was one guy in particular that always started off his conversation with, "I didn't kill my wife, Mrs. Honest." There was quite a lot of amusement there, but there was always, you know, there was that kind of friendliness, which I still think you get in Glasgow. Mm-hmm. But Aberdeen, I found to start with, was more like Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember being in Edinburgh once visiting friends and standing at a bus stop and asking the lady next to me when the bus was due, and she visibly backed off to the other side of the shelter. You just didn't talk to people in Edinburgh. So Aberdeen was a bit like that, but it was also very oddly, because if you think in terms of the amount of culture that was there with the oil industry, they were also very much, if you're from Aberdeen, you're okay. If you've gone to, particularly amongst the men, if you've gone to Robert Gordon's school, you're okay. If you're, you know, an outsider, very difficult to get ahead in business. Mm. And I found the glass ceiling, if you like, was put there. There was only so high you could get in business in Aberdeen if you weren't from Aberdeen. Mm. That was very obvious. But eventually, I think the people were quite friendly, but they took longer to warm up than Glasgow, I would say. I've still got a lot of friends from there. Obviously, I've got Shona's, I'm still friendly with, and Jane, and I've got quite a lot of people I met while I was there that I still keep in touch with. So it was good. Social life was excellent. Mm. So I worked at Aberdeen Enterprise Trust, and then I was headhunted for a job with a marketing company, which I foolishly took. And although it gave me experience doing marketing plans, the company went down, well, they started to go down the tubes, and there was five of us got made redundant on the one day. Mm. But we had all seen it coming. We were good marketing forecasters. So everyone had already been for interviews for jobs, and I had a job interview set up the very day I was getting made redundant. And it was with Grampian Television. Mm. And when I went for the interview, they said, "Well, why do you want to leave your job?" And I said, well, when I wrote the application form, it was because I thought I might be getting made redundant, but I got made redundant at lunchtime today, so that's why I'm here. And they sort of went, oh my God, you know, what cup of tea? Are you all right? Are you in shock? No, I'm fine. You know, it was a relief. So I got the job, I think, partly because I just had gone ahead and turned up for the interview and hadn't batted an eyelid. And that was a strange job because I don't like asking for money. And I was a sponsorship manager, and I had to ask people for money for TV sponsorship. And the other side of the job was merchandising, producing videos and tapes and books and the backup material. Mm-hmm. And I loved that bit. Mm-hmm. So I very often asked people for money for the backup materials, because that was the good way I could get round my thing. Working there was great fun. It was before STV took over. And it was a kind of jolly place to work. I mean, it was very manana. Everybody was very relaxed. There was lots of time spent in the canteen having cups of tea. There was lots of time spent in the subsidised bar having whiskies and social nights. And I had really good fun while I was there. There was a group of people I hung out with. Mm. And we went clay pigeon shooting. And, you know, we used to go off and have jaunts out to various places just to make sure we did stuff. And the work, I was very fortunate work-wise, because just when I was thinking, oh God, my monthly report's due into the board, you know, the angel of abundance would shine on me and I would suddenly come up with a little bit of sponsorship. So I was very lucky from the point of view of I seemed to always manage to get something new in to cheer them up every month for my report.
So how did you find sponsorship? Who did you approach, or how did you do that?
Well, the way it worked was Grampian Television produce a number of programmes and you can put these up for sponsorship so that you get, you know, the sponsor gets to put a tag on the front, the advertising break and the end of the programme. But the ITC code was very strict at the time because sponsorship was just coming into the UK, and you couldn't have someone who was advertising a product show the product on the actual sponsorship trailer. So it was like getting money two steps removed. You had to think in terms of what a company's PR strategy would be, not their advertising strategy. Mm. And you had to link the values that they would try and put across in the PR sense to the values the programme was presenting. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Grampian did a programme called The River, which was about the river from its source down to the seaside. And Shell sponsored it and the backup material, the production of a booklet and a video, which was sold. And they sponsored... Excuse me a minute. Sure. We've got a big message coming through. They sponsored a booklet and they sponsored a video, and they were allowed to sponsor it, and it tied in with their environmental policy, or what they were trying to put across was that we are an environmentally friendly oil company, you know. And but the only slight bit I had a wee bit problem with was the end. Obviously, ended up on the shoreline of Aberdeen. And that had to just be minimal, because if ever Shell had had a spot, you know, an oil spill, it would have been seen as a bit too contentious. Oh. So that was okay. I had, there was another programme called and there was four artists doing crappy pictures. This is going down for posterity. They weren't very good pictures, but we had got unlimited edition prints made, and I had to get them sponsored, and sponsored them. Because they were trying to up their appearance in Aberdeen, and they like to sponsor the arts. So they got their corporate logo on every print, and we had a big opening and a big exhibition, and they came along to that and did lots of yadida stuff. And I'm too sceptical for all this kind of thing. I also had a programme called, it was the usual, Hills and Glens and Sheepdog Trials. Oh, I mean, Grampian's selection of programmes at the time were dire. And there was things like the sheepdog trials, and there was a kind of one man and his dog, a trail up round about, and I managed to get Janssen Pharmaceutical to sponsor them, and it was kind of two steps removed, because to Joe Public they wouldn't have known who the company was, but to farmers they knew they were suppliers of drugs for, I don't know, bugs, sheep bugs and things like that. So it linked in but without actually showing any products. And they came up and we went away up and watched the programme getting made and all the rest of it. So it was quite good from that point of view. I also got the weather sponsored, which my predecessor hadn't managed. So that was a major
coup.
Yeah, coup in my side.
Of course, it was that umbrella maker, so.
Aye, it was. I can't remember who it was now. It's changed so much since then. But the job was a contract job, and I worked in it a year. 2 years, and then I had a contract for a further year, but they told me at the end of that year I wouldn't get the contract renewed because STV were taking over sponsorship for the whole of Scotland, and my job was basically not going to exist. So my mother had died, and I decided I would come back down to Ayr. My dad wasn't well, and I managed to get a job locally in Ayr, and I worked there. I moved back down to Ayr and worked there for a while. It was a graphic design and marketing company, and I was a project manager, which meant I had to walk the thin line between what the client wanted and what the designer said the client was going to have, which was quite hilarious because there was lots of egos and fractious things, and oh dear, it was quite a strange job, but quite enjoyable, and it was nice to be back down. And coming back from, I quite often used to go from Ayr back up to Aberdeen on a Sunday night and drive down in there and go, what on earth am I doing in this city? You didn't get, you know, one of the things that I used to think was weird about it was no sunsets. And I got so used to obviously living in Ayr and getting the sunsets over Arran.
Yeah.
And you get gorgeous sunsets here, and you just didn't get sunsets in Aberdeen. If you got
Of course you're on the other side.
You know, if you got up early enough, there was one or two okay sunrises. But I thought this was just a thing I had until I met someone who lived in Saltcoats at an oily do one night. And that was the thing he lamented to me, was the lack of decent sunsets. So once I came back to Ayr, I felt really, I'd been and wandered, albeit in a very kind of conservative way, but I felt very much at home here, and I didn't particularly want to move away again. And I don't have any desire to go back to Aberdeen or to move to Glasgow again. I like the size of this town, and I like that you can get down the beach and you can go away up the country and stuff like that. So. Yeah.
And you're moving into massage now.
Yeah, life's a strange old thing. I mean, like, how many skills do you have to have? I have been working the past while with Ayr College, and I got made redundant in August. So I've always been in, well, I was interested in the early 90s in alternative therapies, complementary therapies, because I was unwell myself. And I learned Reiki, really just to try and get myself better. And I've always been interested in that ever since then. I've done one or two wee workshops, and I decided, since I'd been made redundant yet again, third time, that you get to the stage where you think, well, you know, how many employers can offer you security, and they can't. So I thought, well, I'll learn some skills which are kind of cash rich. I mean, massage takes about an hour for a full body massage, and the going rate in there is about 20, 25 quid for a full body massage. Indian head massage is about, I think it's about 40 minutes, and it's about £12.50 to £15 for that. Reiki, again, £25 to £30, depending on your level. So there's, you can make money, and I thought, well, if I end up working in a bar or in a part-time job somewhere, I can always supplement it with the therapies.
Because it's becoming very popular. I mean, in Brazil, you see it in the shopping centres. They have the... they have the special seats, and people have things like a 5-minute massage.
Well, when I did the Indian head massage, they used they're called on-site massage chairs, and people sit and put their head through like a Pullman hole thing.
That's right. Yeah.
And we actually worked up the back and round the head just with them, and it looks weird, but it's a really comfy position to sit in.
You even see rows of them at the beach in Rio.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah. So you can do it near a beach.
Oh gosh.
Is there a blonde?
I can't quite imagine that. But one of the things, I mean, when I decided I'd started my studies and it had been interrupted for a variety of reasons, but I decided I would get it done over the summer holidays. And I had asked a lot of the lecturers from your college to come for a free massage, because I can't charge till I'm qualified. But I've only had a few. But I must say, of all the jobs I've done, it's immensely satisfying, because what I did notice was people would come in from work, usually about back at 4 or 5 o'clock, yabbering. Gabble, 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 absolutely off their heads with stress. Not quite sure what was going to happen, but once I explained it and went upstairs and I had my soothing music on and everything was very serene, and I would work away on them, work on their back, and by the time I'd finished, they were just like gaga. And they just had this glazed expression, and most of them commented that they'd forgotten what it was like to feel relaxed. So they were all relaxed, but I know from experience that sometimes you can get too relaxed, and I think some of them felt it was something that they would keep for a holiday, but they didn't want to be that relaxed in the middle of the week because they had something else to do the next day. I think once I get qualified, if there's still no job in the offing, I would maybe look at trying to take a premises somewhere in town, maybe 1 or 2 days a week. But it's strenuous. It's very strenuous.
Very much it is.
And when I originally started trying to learn massage a few years ago when I was unwell, and I just didn't have the stamina for it. And some of the moves twist your back and are awkward for you to do. So I think I'll have to, you know, step up the old keep fit syndrome. I have to go to yoga and try and get flexible myself so that I can do it.
Do you find there are centres? Because in Bridger Weir there's a centre which was, I think, is 4 or 5 masseurs.
When a friend of mine lives across the lane, her and I both learned Reiki at the same time. And when we learned Reiki, it was about the late 90s, maybe 96 or 97, the guy who taught us was based in Peebles and came highly recommended. I think he was the first Reiki master to do Reiki in Scotland. Excellent guy. And he wanted to come through to Ayr and do a Reiki workshop through Ayr. So he asked me to try and set one up for him, and I couldn't get enough people interested. There were 3, and he wouldn't come through for 3. He wanted a minimum of 10. And I checked out all the various places we could have venues, and tried to drum up some interest, and there was nothing. But now, twice a year in Ayr, there's the alternative health fair, and it's chock-a-block, and there's so many people do Reiki, there's hardly any demand for it. And lots of people are attuned either to level 1 or 2. There's not so many Reiki masters in town, but there's also, I mean, there's an alternative health place in Garden Street, and they do everything from osteopathy, chiropractor, I can't pronounce them, Indian head massage, Reiki, you name it, they do it. Jan de Vries has also opened up a clinic in Wellington Square. He doesn't do Reiki because I think he doesn't believe in it, but he offers just about every other kind of therapy, including colour therapy, which I've had twice, and which is ace, which is amazing.
What's colour therapy?
Colour therapy, there's evidence been found that it's actually been done way back in Egyptian times, and it's thought if Atlantis ever did exist, it's thought it was used way back then. It's a mixture of using crystal lights and shining a pulsed light through it so that the vibration of the light interacts with the colours of your chakras, if you like. Mm. And it sounds weird, you know, it sounds totally bizarre. But I have never had such a reaction. Mm-hmm. I went just after.
Do you watch this, or do you
just lie there, and you have little coloured lights shone on your various chakra points? It's Jan de Vries's daughter that does it. Mm-hmm. She's been trained to do it, and it's almost like little spotlights, but there's filters over them, and there's little containers that the crystals are put in, so that the light shines through and the light pulses. And however it works, I don't know how it works, but I mean, I went to her feeling very kind of down because I knew I'd been made depressed and I was exhausted. Mm. And I was lying on the couch, and she had a couple of spotlights placed at one or two of my chakra points, and she primarily put red and orange in for some odd reason. She just felt that was the colours I needed. Mm. And it was the most bizarre experience. I felt as if it was almost like there was a big kind of realignment happening. Mm-hmm. I felt this kind of shunk, 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 shunk all the way down. And it was just as if everything was getting put back into place the whole way down my body. Mm-hmm. And then I felt absolutely brand new. I was high as a kite. And it was only like 40 minutes lying there with a couple of lights shining on me. And I felt brilliant. It was just amazing. Mm. So it was quite the most peculiar experience I've had.
I've never heard of colour therapy.
No, it's ancient. It was actually the very, very first thing I ever read up on. Mm. And that was back in the early 80s. Mm. When I was at RGIT, I came across a book on colour therapy. We had to give a presentation on behavioural aspects of management. Mm. And because I'd come from a design background, I wanted to do something that was easy. I'd written an article for a magazine on colour trends and so forth, and I dug that out, doctored it a bit, and did a bit about colour in the workplace. So I'd studied the effects of colour for my presentation. And it was the very first therapy, if you like, that I actually read up on. But then I kind of forgot about it for a very long while. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time I'd experienced it, and it was superb. So I've been back for another go. Mm-hmm. But Tertia doesn't give it out very often. I think she's a very psychic person. And you can go and say, I think I need another shot of the colour therapy. And she's like, no, you just need a good sleep. So she's very sparing about how often she'll give you the colour therapy. Not that there's nothing harmful in it, but she's very good at intuiting whether you actually need that, or whether you need a dose of herbal medicine, or whether you just need to calm down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she doesn't always give you it. So that would be one I would like to learn eventually, because I think I'm drawn to it, obviously, from my design background and the colour side. But all of the courses I've checked out are hideously expensive. I mean, it's all of these alternative therapy courses are getting pricey, because accreditation is becoming very important now for insurance purposes, and the more places spring up, the more they expect you to be qualified in a given therapy.
Yeah. I know that Borders Bookshop in Glasgow offers massage one evening a week.
Really?
You go to the bookshop and you get the massage in Borders.
I wonder if Whittaker's would do that.
Oh, is that, that's an air?
That's an air.
Yeah, do you have you go along to one and say?
I could.
Why not?
Yeah, I suppose. I think anything at all that would. I mean, I'm.
Because they say it's bringing in the punters, obviously.
Of course. I mean, I'm not too troubled about when I'll get a job. I know something will crop up eventually, and it may well be that this has all happened because I've got to get off my butt and start up my own business, which I've been thinking of doing for so long, and it just has never got around, because there's always been a job that's come and saved my soul and my bank balance. But I know that certainly that more anxious about my lack of work than I am. I mean, he was quite traumatised when I got made redundant. Mm. I think he thought for some odd reason that I would expect him to keep me. which is just not true, you know, perfectly. And also, I think it was just the concept, because he's worked as a teacher for 30 odd years and has never ever done anything else. And he could not perceive himself of how he would react to getting made redundant. He wouldn't know what to do. Because I've chopped and changed that much that I just thought, okay, it's an opportunity to do something different again. But I must admit, I'm getting to the stage where I would like a reasonable
income.
Income, but something kind of reasonably stable.
Yeah.
Because I don't have a pension to speak of.
Oh, right.
Because of all the various jobs I've had, I don't have a pension. So that was another reason for the massage and alternative therapies, because I thought, well, even if I retire, I can always still earn money if I'm fit enough to. Yeah. You know, do massage or therapy. So it's my pension plan. As much as anything else. Yeah. So.